The Home Show with Sinead Ryan.
With Mila.
On News Talk.
Hello and you're very welcome along to the latest episode of the Home Show podcast. I'm Sinead Ryan, your host, and coming up this week. Winter's no time for sitting out in the garden, but how about building yourself a garden room so you can still enjoy it? If you're tired of trying to sneak a peek in your own neighbour's windows, well, snoop no more. Dublin Open House is here. We'll be talking about the houses you can just walk right into. Portrait miniatures had a very special place in Irish homes and society, and we'll be hearing about a special exhibition from the Irish Georgian Society. And Natasha Rocca-Devine will be here to put the horror in your hallway and the terror in your TV room as we talk Halloween decorations. If you'd like to get involved in our show or get in touch with us, it's an email at thehomeshow@newstalk.com, and you'll find me over on Instagram and Twitter/X if you want to get in touch with me there at SineadRyan100. And if you miss any of the bits, well, they're all up on podcasts. So wherever you're listening to this, that's where you'll find us. Now, I have a bit of a confession, folks, maybe two to make. I haven't so much as bought a pumpkin, never mind hung up a witch or a ghost or a ghoulie outside. In fact, I may not do any of those things at all this year. Last Halloween, we didn't get a single child to the door and ended up eating all of the sweets ourselves, which was good news only for the dentist. But it's hard to know this year, so I'm looking forward to Natasha Rocca-Devine coming in a little bit later with some really easy last minute, very stylish, because it's Natasha, Halloween decorations, which might inspire. So if you're like me and you haven't got around to it yet, well, do stay tuned for that. And you are very welcome along to the Home Show. Now, at this time of year in Ireland, getting out in the garden can sometimes feel more like braving the storm rather than soaking up the rays. If only there was a way to get the sitting room in the garden without having to expose yourself to the elements. Well, maybe a garden room might be the answer. Sybil Archer is an interior designer and joins me now. Sybil, you're very welcome to the Home Show.
Thank you so much.
Now, I'm looking at this garden. I'm kind of slightly triggered because we did a lot of this during COVID.
Yes.
And we were talking about people having to work from home, and companies were like, oh, we'll help you build an office. And there were people getting prefabs and sheds converted and doing radio recordings from the shed and all this kind of thing. But this is an entirely different prospect. You have created this. I'm surprised to say, we'll get onto the cost of it later on, because it wasn't actually as much maybe as people might think.
Yeah.
But it's a really beautiful example of a garden room. You've actually created a multi-purpose space here. So talk to me a little bit about what your plan was. You live in Churchtown in,
yes,
in Dublin, 14. What your plan was and why you did this.
Yes. So we bought this bungalow, which we renovated, and for our young family. And we, as everybody went up and planned, and we had all the space. But as the kids got a bit bigger, we needed extra space. So we started looking at the, like, everybody get a bigger kitchen with kind of a family area. And when we got quotes from the builders, like, well, it was a ground floor extension without an extra, like, kitchen area or without an extra bathroom or anything, the cost was exorbitant. It was between 180,000 and 300,000 for less than 40 square meters.
Crazy, isn't it? Yeah.
So it's just, yeah. And it really didn't add any value to the house. Mm. You know, it might have given an extra place to sit, but that was it. So we started looking. I always research everything. And like that, you go down a rabbit hole. And I started looking at the idea of garden rooms. And all of a sudden, it just opened this other prospect. You know, the idea, we always loved our garden. But when I started looking into the garden rooms, and we went to visit some of the showrooms, and we saw the quality, you know, of the finish and what it would be, just became really appealing. And then that compared with the price, you know, the time, also the build time, you know, you're looking at a few weeks versus a few months. You know, most likely there is no planning permission required. So again, they kind of speed up the process. Mm. And that's how we went about. And it was actually before, just before COVID, because we got the original quote was January that year.
Oh, right.
You know,
so that worked out well.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
Because we got the quote, I think, was like, yeah, it was the middle of January, and we ended up building it in November that year.
It's lovely. Now, this isn't what you do, what you used to do in real life. I mean, you haven't always been in this space in interiors and design.
No, not at all. Like, I just ended up being in interior just from building our own family homes, you know. And over the years, like many people, you know, through the crash, Celtic Tiger, all that, we bought a property, we were stuck with a property, we couldn't sell it. and like that, kind of the vet, that's where the kind of the staging part came. You're actually doing up the house so that we were able to sell it. So that's how we ended up. Then, like, I'm Italian originally, so I had a love of antiques and interiors from there. And then we moved to California, and that's where I really discovered, like, the love of interiors and, like, the natural material, the simplicity.
And you've brought a touch of that California vibe to this garden room.
Yes.
Because it's light wood, you've kept it very minimal inside. So did was that the aesthetic that you were going for? You even have an outdoor area on your outdoor area.
Absolutely, yes. And that definitely came from California. Like, when we, the first thing we did when we came back was building a pergola.
Yeah.
And I know I was trying to find somebody to build in, and they weren't very popular back then.
Yeah.
So we got a pergola. And
there
like
wouldn't
that,
be an Irish range of companies selling pergolas.
So we got one custom made, and it was because it was a north-facing garden. We got it done at the far end of the garden where it's the last of the sun. And like that, we cleared that side of the garden and to put the garden room, and we discovered that all of a sudden we had a sun trap. So we built another patio beside the garden room, which we started using a lot. We would do s'mores in the evening, and again, a little bit of...
And I suppose the good thing about a garden room, which is separate, is that you can plonk it any which way you like.
Absolutely.
So it's not like what I, you know, putting an extension on your house and you're limited to what's already there. So you can actually go sun chasing.
Absolutely. And that's what we did. We had an we had a beautiful view from our garden to the old bottle tower in Churchtown, which we only discovered just pure chance. And that's where we wanted to kind of extend on that side. But it was we managed to put the garden facing that side. So when you sit down, not only you would see the sunset, you would see the bottle tower. It was just beautiful. The view was...
Okay, now talk to us about the ugly bit. How the process, the foundations, how long it took, because you had to have it plumbed, you had to have electricity, all that kind of thing. And that's where people begin to kind of get a bit of a headache and think, oh, is it worth it?
It's so easy. It was just, compared to a build, like a regular build, it was amazing because start to end was 2 weeks, the process.
Wow.
So they came over, they delivered all the material. It was all built on site.
Who built it for you?
It's Garden Rooms.
Okay.
It's John Sherry from Garden Rooms. And I couldn't recommend it enough because we had a few meetings and also finalized the design. Like, I wanted an overhang.
Because it comes out kind of like a kit. Do you know, like it's ready made. They're not building it from scratch there once that your foundation's down.
That's it. So they came, they set. So we got there, we cleared the garden. So we just got the landscape. They cut everything back. They came, they laid the foundation, and then they came, they built it on site. Because they built it on site, they can put it really close to the boundary wall. And then we were very conscious of our neighbors, make sure that, because it's quite a substantial structure, like, and it's quite, you know, big. So we wanted to make sure from the back it looked okay and looked well for the neighbors. So they see, so we put cedar at the top as well in the back, so that that's what they would see. And but beginning to end was 2 weeks.
Wow.
The build. And they and it was so neat. There was no messing, and they did all the plumbing. We did it fully wired for internet. We have like a toilet inside.
Is it warm?
It's got an electric heater.
Okay.
And I have to be honest, like, we supplemented it with a Dyson. You know, so in the winter, but like, my husband worked there like permanently.
So in terms of then the multifunction, now we have to be careful with garden rooms because, okay, you don't need planning permission as long as
it's
under the meterage and you've 25 square meters left in your garden and all that kind of thing. However, you can't sleep there. You can't have it as a kind of a house, a little granny flat or anything like that. So tell me what purposes you use it for.
Oh, it's been amazing. Talking about multifunctional, because obviously, like, Monday to Friday until Friday at 2 o'clock, it's like a home office. You know, my husband ended up working there permanently, and it's like, because it doesn't face the house, it would just like face the garden. It fully.
Oh, he's not distracted by putting on a wash beer or cooking the dinner or hoovering the downstairs.
He just walks in for a cup of tea.
He can't see it. Right. Okay. All right.
Move from the mess.
One of those. All right.
Yeah. And so it's a home office. It's like a place for Friday afternoon becomes transformed into a place for the kids' play dates. They go there. It became really popular. All the kids, they love it. And they will be there in the summer, like the garden, the doors are open. So the kids will be outside playing football and then put the food out there. They eat, you know, they have their food there. The PlayStation is there. Then they use it in the evening, like watch rugby matches, football matches, you know, cinema room for the kids as well. We got a TV which you can turn so that they'll be able to see it and, you know, just fill their space with kids. And they loved it. And then for me, during the weekend, like on a Sunday, it's a lovely place to just go and sit and relax and read a book.
Yeah. becomes almost, your space, yes. your kind
so
of den.
So everybody in the family would have had a use for the, of the room. It was just, it's just an amazing space.
Now, give us the bad news. What was the cost of the whole thing, Sybil?
So the particular, like anything, you know, you go in from a front price. Mm-hmm. And I think the front price at the time, and I know since then, probably the price has increased substantially as well, like because of the cost of the cedar has gone up. I think they were starting from about 29,000 back then. Then we paid extra because we put the toilet in.
Yeah.
So it was completely...
Because plumbing is always expensive, isn't it? And get the waterworks and everything. But like...
And then the overhang. The overhang was something... Because I didn't want it to look just like a box.
Yeah.
I was really keen to get this little bit over and that was an additional cost.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, a little bit on the extra. And it looked... It's kind of coming out like the roof comes out over ahead like a little porch. It's lovely. And as you say, a lot less... than doing a build, a lot less disruptive than doing a build, and a lot cheaper.
Yes.
Quicker.
And to be honest, it really adds to the value of the house in the sense that I think what is added to the house compared to if we spent 180,000 to extend our kitchen, to put a sofa in it, versus spending whatever we spent at the end of the landscape, maybe 45,000 to have this space, which is so multifunctional.
Exactly. So what would you finally recommend if people are thinking about doing that and saying, oh, I have the space now, I'm going to put this down the end, but I want to do it properly?
Yes. I would first shop or go and see, if you actually have to go to the showrooms and see them, see the quality of the build.
Yeah, and be in the space,
absolutely,
don't you, rather than looking at them online?
Oh, yes. Online doesn't give you... And like since COVID, I think there is about... Like at the time, there was Shomera and there was Garden Rooms. And I think there is 20 more companies that do them. And they do this.
So lots of choice.
Loads of choice. I think it's very important to go and meet the people. And another thing is recommendation. Word of mouth, somebody who's had them, you know, built, you can go and visit it. I know many people came to see ours, actually get a feel for the product, you know, what it is. So that would be the first thing. And then look at the space, look at your garden and look how we want it positioned, because it depends what you're going to use it for. Do you want to see it from the back of your house? Do you want to look in? Do you want it private? Like for us, we put it on the side because when we looked out the back, we didn't want to see it. Like, so it was kind of...
Yeah.
The two of them were in a way independently. Mm. They each had their own view, which is... That's what we wanted. Yeah. And then the other thing, you look at the landscaping as well, because I think that's really important.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, you know, you don't want the neighbours in saying, what are you doing here? And it's in my way and all that. So it has to sit within your garden as well.
I think that's really important.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a very imposing structure. They're about 3 metres tall, most of them. Mm. So when you see a build, it's like, oh my goodness, this is like, it's big. And then, but when you landscape and you do the planting around and it's beautiful, like you can really make it a feature.
Fantastic. All right. Well, you've definitely done that with it. And we have with us Sybil's daughter, Ellie. Ellie, you're very welcome along to the studio.
Thank you.
We're talking about this beautiful room that you have in your garden. Do you love it?
I really like it. It's really cosy and I can always have my friends over and we spend like most of the time in there. We do movie nights and then we just like play with my toys.
And is it like a kind of grown up space away from mum and dad in the house?
Well, I mean...
They're always nearby for the treats.
Yeah.
But you're not under their feet.
Yeah.
And tell me, do your friends love it as well?
Yeah, they really liked it. Like sometimes we just sit on the couch watching a movie and then all my pets would come in and then it would just be like really calming and fun.
It's like having your own little house.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Great.
Yeah.
All right, there'll be fights now. Do you have sisters and brothers?
I have one older brother.
All right, okay. So there's a bit of a tussle, tug and war over who gets it first, is there?
Yeah.
All right.
Sometimes he wants to watch the rugby, but then I want to have a movie night with my friends.
Right, well, that dilemma, you'll have to get a second garden room, Mum. All right, well, Ellie, thanks for telling us about that. I'm glad to hear you're enjoying your garden room. Back to Mum now. Sybil, can people find you online? Do you have an Instagram?
Yes, it's Sybil Archer.
Sybil Archer, S-I-B-I-L. All right, that's fantastic. Sybil, thanks for coming in and telling us all about it. We now all have garden room envy because of it, but I wish you well in it and, glad that you were able to do it in exactly the way that you wanted. Thanks
and
for
I'm
coming in.
I'm happy to recommend anyway. Any advice anybody needs, you know.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much for having me.
And it's lovely to see you. Now, let's be honest, we've all got a bit of the nosy neighbour about us. We love to sneak a peek in the window of other people's houses to see how they've decorated or what they've done differently to us. But this week, You don't have to go snooping around because it's Dublin Open House 2024 and you can just walk on in. Emmett Scanlon is the director of the Irish Architecture Foundation and joins me again this year to talk a little bit more about what's on. Now, Emmett, you're very welcome to the show.
How are you?
I have to kind of take a little bit of issue with you because I've had a look through the list and all the old favourites are there, Farmley House and, you know, beautiful building, Carton House, all this kind of thing. The National Children's Hospital, how did that make the list and what can people see?
Well, the Children's Hospital is probably one of the most talked about buildings in our history, let's say, maybe.
For sure.
Since the GPO or some other building. And I guess for us, the whole point of the festival is to give people access, is to enable people to come out, see things for themselves and to make up their own minds. So opening the hospital at this point when it's, you know, in the news, not quite ready to be occupied, opening it up to the public, they can book a tour and go and see it. So they can see the, I suppose, the building behind the headlines. They can see the quality of the space that's there. They can start to get engaged with the building. And as I said, they can make up their own minds about exactly what they think the building's going to
so
be.
You
it's
can,
an important
so
part of our
behind
future.
All the hoarding and all the barriers and everything, people can go in now and have a little wander
people
around.
People are going to get into some of it and see it around. Yeah. So,
good.
Yeah,
well,
it's
maybe
be a tour.
If nothing else, they'll get to see what all that money is being spent on and how it'll look and navigating the space and all of that.
Exactly. Well, I mean, in our experience of Open House over the years, and, you know, this has grown exponentially since COVID, people are just curious about what's going on. There's a lot more discussion and debate in the headlines about public space, about public buildings, about housing, and really to empower people to have their own opinion and also to get involved in the discussion locally and also even to be able to speak back to the powers that deliver these things, giving people access to it and to, you know, the language to discuss it is really, really important. So nothing beats seeing things for yourself.
And I suppose there's a piece about, look, when people see it, they'll know what all the fuss was about and why it cost so much and all of that. So maybe there's a kind of, like, this is our, by opening it up now, there's a kind of a visionary thing about it. Like, you know, most people will see it when they're, unfortunately, in the position where they're bringing a sick child, but to actually see it now and see the world class, we're told it's world class, it's the best in the planet and all this kind of thing, to actually see it in operation would be, would kind of maybe sell it a little bit more.
Yeah, well, I mean, it won't quite be an operation, obviously, this weekend. It's not ready for that. But I think, you know, public buildings are very important to our sense of our identity, you know, and who we are as a nation, actually. And the Children's Hospital, I think in time, will become part of that story, you know, and where it's too soon to tell exactly how it's going to play out.
Okay, so but, it's on the, oh, right, you've sold it, it's on the list, it's on the list. Now, tell us about some of the other properties that people can see. Now, there's one on the list which I'm familiar with myself, and actually I like the idea it's on the list because this isn't a grand mansion, it's not, you know, one where landed gentry were in. It's Cornamona Court in Ballyfermot on the Kylemore Road. Why is this part of Open House?
Well, one of the kind of topics or the kind of things we're talking about is aging, right? So, you know, the Central Statistics Office tell us that by, you know, 2051, we're going to be 1.2 million people over the age of 65. Aging is facing us all. And so living, we're living longer and older and living together more. So we need housing and we need to talk now about how to cope with that. So across all four parts of the city and county, we have housing that's open to people to view, elderly housing, housing for seniors. And Cornamona Court is one of those by Paul Keogh Architects. And it's an interesting exemplar because it has new housing with new people moving in, and then it also provides, has inbuilt the design of it, the capacity to kind of relocate people who live nearby and move in, which means that this question of how do you downsize or how do you move or what happens when your house is too big for you, you know, all of these kind of quite difficult and quite emotional things are being dealt with through design and actually through this kind of strategic project where people can stay rooted in their community because nobody wants to move, really. People have been there a long time and they can move in and start to, you know, continue
and,
their lives.
And
in
this
their local, local
yeah. And look, it's so important, and we've talked about that on the home show before. People are happy enough to downsize if they can stay near their friends, near their shops, near their neighbours, near their friends. And this is a great example of how that can be facilitated in communities and not in towns out miles away, you know. What's your own favourite, Emmett?
There's a great house by a young architect called Tom O'Brien in Dublin 8, which I'm going to pop along and see. I mean, unfortunately, it may be booked out, but there's always cancellations, so keep your eye on the website. But it's a very small, very beautiful little house. by him. And there's quite a few actually private houses right across the county. There's one in Balbriggan by Robert Burke, architect, and then there's some in the city as well that are worth seeing. It's always great to get into the private houses, which are, as I think we talked about this before, maybe it's always tricky now with post-COVID. People are less keen to show their houses, but the ones that we see are really, really high quality.
How does a house make the list? Is it like the architecture of the house itself, or are these houses with a famous association or an example of a type of architecture?
Well, this year, for the first time actually in the history of Open House, we put out what's called an open call. And so we made it really clear, because, you know, we're trying to make the festival more accessible and more open as possible, that anyone could, as every year, kind of suggest a building or a project that they wanted to be included. And, you know, we very rarely refuse people as long as they have the resources and we can work with them to deliver it. So if anyone has a house that they are willing to show, if an architect has a house that they're willing to kind of share or advocate for of our own and wants to, it's totally possible each year. So the more the merrier, really. I mean, the appetite out there is enormous. So we have no doubt any year that the private houses or people's homes are going to book out and be really in high demand. Not only because we're nosy, but I mean, we partly are. But also, I think you really get a great sense of how people live, how they're adopting, how families are growing in houses, and how design actually supports people's everyday life.
Yeah, and actually, really, you can get great inspiration from the way people have built a staircase or curved wall.
Or how they've accommodated children's play areas and work areas. Yeah. And, you know, particularly, again, when we were living and working at home, those kind of learnings or lessons we have are still impacting on how we design in new spaces. So it's great to see them played out in real life.
Fantastic. All right. Where can people find out more now?
Openhousedublin.com. We've updated and enhanced the website this year. There's a great filter, a little button, filter button there. You can also filter by county and city. So you can find places in your local community, your local area, and also travel right across the city.
Fantastic. All right. Well, Emmett, I hope it goes very well for you. It's always booked out. It always does very, very well. And people do need to book. Would you advise that?
Some drop-ins. Yeah. This year we have a drop-in pop-up festival venue in Charlemont Square in Dublin 1, and we have three exhibitions, two of which are on housing, in fact, and one which is the Reason of Towns Touring Exhibition. So if you want to come in there and hear about the festival, you can also drop in there as well.
Fantastic.
But it is worth always checking the website on the morning of, just in case cancel and can't make it.
Of course. All right. Well, Emma Scanlon, Director of the Irish Architecture Foundation, who is looking after Open House for 2024. Thanks a million for joining us on The Home Show. Now, Portrait Miniatures and the Irish Country House is an exhibition running in the City Assembly Hall in Dublin 2 at the moment. Donna Cahill is Executive Director of the Irish Georgian Society, which is running the exhibition and joins me now again in the Home Show studio. You're very welcome back.
It's a great pleasure to be here again.
Yeah, it's nice to see you. Now, this is a topic that interests me greatly because I love these finest of fine art pieces, which are miniatures. But for listeners who aren't quite sure what they are, describe the miniatures to us.
Well, gosh, where do you start with the miniature? That in 18th century Ireland, the miniature, the role of the portrait miniature was very much as a memento, that you had your portrait painted in miniature so you could share it with somebody else, and that person then could keep the miniature on them. They could keep it on their person if they were travelling. That quite often the miniatures were given if you were leaving home, or sometimes they were done to remember somebody who had passed. The manner in which they were presented, the manner in which they were made, also varied to a very great degree. So in the 17th century, they were the tradition had been to do them in enamel. But in the 18th century, then a new method of producing them emerged, where they were done on watercolour on ivory. The method then of presenting them might have varied as well, depending, I suppose, on the means of the individual. So they might have been framed in a silver or a gold frame. Quite often they were kept then for protection in a leather pouch. They might have been kept on your person, that you might have displayed them. You might have hung them on a ribbon around your neck so as to present, to demonstrate to others, this is somebody who's very close to you.
And some of them are beautifully jewelled as well, you know, if they are going to hang on a ribbon or, you know, be used as jewellery, and they might have little stones around them or little diamonds around them.
There's different ways in which people might have found out about who was going to do their portrait miniature, one of which was through jewellers. So as I said, that they could have been done in silver. The frames could be silver or gold. They could have had precious or semi-precious jewels stud in them to make them that bit more elaborate. Mm. So the more elaborate, perhaps more elaborate the casing, maybe that the portrait was more meaningful for a particular reason.
So it was kind of like the snapshot of the time.
Well, a snapshot, which unfortunately photography put an end to. Yeah. So come mid-19th century and photo portraits started to emerging.
Yeah.
The need for the demand for portrait miniature artists diminished as well.
Yeah. And I suppose these would have been people or families, you know, who could afford maybe to have proper portraits done at home, which are, of course, enormous and enormously expensive. Did this type of art make them a little bit more accessible maybe to the middle classes?
Well, very much so. That having a portrait painted by a professional artist would cost a considerable amount of money. Whereas this, the portrait miniature was that bit more accessible. But also it could be produced more, you could produce more of them. Mm-hmm. And the type of people then who would have commissioned them would have varied to a great degree too. That to a certain extent in some cases that you might have found that a portrait miniature artist might have had a number of ready-made portraits to go, and then the sitter would come in and they were just painting their face.
Oh, go away!
And the key characteristics.
Oh, I see. So they did the dresses and the suits done indeed, and just pop the head on.
There could be a certain level of mass production about it to a certain degree. But of course, that also is going to depend on the artist who was doing it.
Yeah. And was there, it must have been a very specialist type of art, because, I mean, even the tools that were required to do it, the type of paint and the type of the tiniest of brushes, one would imagine.
Well, they were interestingly that the portrait miniature artist wasn't held in great esteem by fellow artists. That it was a way of making, I suppose, a quicker way of making money rather than trying to ply your trade through through producing.
They were the cheap and cheerful kind of.
Well, perhaps so. Yeah, certainly. There was a different market.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, tell me a little bit about this exhibition. These 250 items. Where did they come from?
Well, the items which are in the exhibition were collected by a member of the Irish Georgian Society called Edmund Corrigan, and Edmund was a member of the society from the early 1970s. His story about becoming involved was that he attended a talk that Desmond Guinness gave at that time about the Irish country house and about the challenges facing Ireland's built heritage at the period, and he was entranced. He was enchanted, as many people were by Desmond and his blue eyes. And that he had an interest in art and architecture before that, but this encouraged him to look into it further. That in looking at the ever diminishing number of country houses in Ireland during the course of the 20th century, in the 1970s and 1980s, again they were continuing to diminish in number. The collections were being sold and dispersed. When they were being brought back together again, that Edmund noticed that. That large pieces of furniture were put on display and that large portraits were put on display. But what was missing in the presentation or the representation of these country houses was the ephemera that you might see from the accumulation of items over the course of centuries. One of the things that he saw missing was that of portrait miniatures, which when the houses are sold, they just would have been sold, that the portrait miniatures would have been sold as a job lot. So he took a different approach to collecting portrait miniatures than would normally have been the case. That normally collectors would buy them on the basis of the artist. I would be very much driven by that. Whereas Edmund had a much greater interest in the story behind the piece, which really is what the purpose of the miniatures was in the first place. They were to help somebody as an aid memoir of somebody that they love or somebody that's close to them. Mm. So he was interested in the sitter. He was interested in the family they were associated with. He was interested with the country house, the big house with which they were associated. And those themes drove his collecting. So you can see that in addition to the exhibition that's on in the City Assembly House, there's also a very scholarly volume that's been published.
You've brought it in here, and it's a very fine looking book. This is, I think, what we call a coffee table tome.
Hot off the press is the best way to get it. It was delivered to
us. Oh, isn't this just lovely?
Yesterday.
And all of the little tiny miniatures and pictures have been beautifully represented here, actually. And all of the citations, and you can see, as you said earlier, about some of the casings and the frames and all of that. It's absolutely beautiful. And will this book be on sale?
So this book is on sale. It's for on sale through our bookshop in the City Assembly House. It's on our website and it's been distributed to shops around the country as well.
I'm thinking it might make a nice Christmas present. Portrait Miniatures and the Irish Country House by Kevin V. Mulligan. Now, the exhibition itself, Donna, so that's running until next Wednesday, the 23rd.
That's right.
In the Daniel O'Connell Room in the City Assembly House. And it's free of charge?
It's free of charge, yep. And there's another exhibition in the building at the time, tying in with the Irish Georgian Society's Architectural Conservation Awards, which were announced last Thursday. So in our large octagonal exhibition room, all of the entries to the awards are on display. So you get to see two free exhibitions.
Two for the price of nothing. Indeed, right. Indeed. Okay, very good.
And there's this opportunity as well, I suppose, to learn more about the Portrait Miniature and to see them very much close at hand.
All right. Well, people can hop along and see that. And it's beautiful space, of course, a lovely exhibition. And of course, the book, if people want it as well. Thank you very much for coming in and showing us all of that, Donna. You're always very enthusiastic about all of the things that are going on, and it's lovely to have this part of our heritage available because it's just so beautiful. That's Donna Cahill, Executive Director of the Irish Georgian Society. I have been joined in studio by our little fairy light, our little, I'm not going to say little pumpkin because
I don't mind. I've been called so much worse. A little pumpkin sounds fabulous.
Our very stylish, very stylish Natasha Rocketvine. You're very welcome.
Thank you
back
for having
to
me.
The home show studio. Are you a fan of Halloween?
Do you know what? I've always loved it. And I lived in America for a while. So as you can imagine, it was incredible there. I was literally inspired by the designs. But now I'm a mom, I actually have to really get into it. You know that way? I was always a fan of it, but now I'm like, you know, I really need to learn the tips and tricks even more so with, you know, the DIY things.
Yeah,
stuff.
Because it's like fun. With the kids, it's kind of become a massive
huge
thing.
It's like America here. It's a, like,
isn't
100%,
it?
Yeah, exactly. And for me, I remember with my Aunt Phyllis doing apple popping and getting, you know, the really traditional pieces like for Halloween. And I really want to bring that back in to, you know, to keep that as well as the decorations and the dress up. But I do think for me, children have so much pressure nowadays. It's lovely to dress up and just escape and have fun. That's
it
what it's about
is.
For me.
It
and
is.
Styling it and having enjoyment.
And I hope it hasn't gotten, my kids are long gone, but I hope it hasn't got to the stage now where parents are feeling this pressure. Oh, I've spent 100 quid on a costume
and paint and all that kind of thing. It shouldn't feel
it's,
like that.
Yeah, it should be something that you can just have a bit of crack with some crepe paper and toilet roll holders and
100%.
That kind of thing. All right. So you've brought us 10 top tips to do some last minute styling. And I know you'll put them up on your Instagram.
I know you will, Natasha
Rocketvine. Wait till you see these folks, okay? Because she goes all out. I know she said, oh, these are really simple and anyone can do them. You are going to say that, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
They're fab. Go and look at it, right, while we're doing this. Okay, spooky styling. I love your alliteration, by the way. You've given me loads here.
Yeah, I actually worked really hard on that. I was so, and I couldn't get one down and it took me ages.
We got it. I'm going to call them all out now then.
Thank you.
Spooky styling, all right. Now, so we're talking here about Halloween motifs, so... I'm thinking, you know, cut out pumpkins, skeletons in the window. Is that the kind of thing?
For me, that's probably the entrance where you would see that most, you know, as you walk past or the windows or like the landscape, depending if you have an apartment or a house. But I think when you see the styling, you know, the main pieces like pumpkins, wreaths, and obviously wreaths are really popular now, but like the ghosts, bats, you know, all the kind of, I'm not mad into skulls and bones, but obviously they're part of like, you know, the Halloween
But decor. you can download loads of stencils and
cut them out
and just,
100%,
yeah, black paper or paint them or whatever.
Exactly.
Something to do. It's great. Okay, loads of that. Now, the pumpkins themselves.
Yeah, there's so many different options. I'm actually like researching myself. I mean, in Dunn's you can get these gorgeous pumpkins that you light up and they're actually stunning. You could nearly use them all year round. Do you know that way in your garden or something, like they look like beautiful lit up with battery lights. But you know, you can do anything. You can spray paint them and have them gold or whatever your favourite colour is. You can cut them out, which, you know, is the traditional approach. Mm-hmm. You can put my friend Laura, she's not another crafter and she's absolutely amazing, and she puts flowers in the pumpkins. So it's really stylish.
Oh,
she does something really different. So it's kind of like your vase for a couple of weeks. Do you know that way? And they last. And then obviously you can put in candles. I mean, you can put in like long candles, like block candles. And it really depends on, I suppose, where you're putting them. Does that make sense? Like if you're going to leave them inside or outside.
Yeah, it can be nice outside to have the candles, you know, inside the pumpkin, but you can see them through the cutouts of the eyes and mouth. Yeah. And actually, there seems to be a big movement now because there's so many different types. When I think of a pumpkin, you think of the massive big orange thing. But in fact, they come yellow, they come orangey, they come green.
Yeah.
You can get marrows, all so types of things.
Types. Yeah, it's become a really trendy thing.
Yeah, and in, of course, in ancient Ireland, they use turnips.
Oh,
you know, to cut out. So, and on the basis that nobody likes to eat them.
If you have them, if you don't want to go buy a pumpkin, you can use your turnip.
Exactly. So lots and lots of choices there to do it. Now, in terms of the garden, I hadn't actually thought of doing up the garden. You're saying Gothic gardens are all the rage.
I think so. And I think that for me is all black and kind of nets and things like that. And as you said, you could use like fishnet tights if you have them or just anything you have at home. That's what I'm all about. Like you said, any fabrics you have or a dress that you might have that you don't use, you know, use what you have and you can cut them up and like, I suppose staple gun them or glue them across or sellotape depending on how much I suppose where you are if there's going to be rain because let's be honest it's Ireland. And then candles and things like fairy lights are a good idea to put behind them because it still lights them up. And then as I said you could spray your pumpkins black, so it's really just about being creative, but also I'm very much about keeping it sustainable, not spending a fortune, because as you said you don't want that pressure. So if you buy spray paint you can use it again, you know, or if you're buying things like think of how you can repurpose that and not spend loads of money, because you're teaching, I want to teach my daughter, you know, you don't just get 20 new things because it's Halloween.
Exactly.
And it's not just it's not pressure for them either. You want it to be fun. And I think things that you can interact with, but also your own style, really. You know, like it has to go to your own garden style, you know, things that suit your house.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So all the fishnet tights. Who is going to... I don't know how many pairs of fishnet tights people have on board. But you can. Now, the lighting is important. You mentioned there about the little fairy lights. And I think that's a lovely idea because they can be strung over, if you have an outdoor set, over kind of a tree or whatever outside, and it lights maybe a pathway coming in.
Exactly.
But some other options that you have.
So you can layer your lighting. Obviously, like I on the Instagram, which I'll put up, you see the house that's all black and all the different layers. Like that's obviously more impactful. So the darker the room, the more impact it is. So I feel like if you don't obviously want to paint your whole house black, which you wouldn't do, maybe cover the windows black, you know, or like put a sheen in front of it and then add the lighting in like that with the fairy lights or candles. Or if you like, some people don't want to use candles around children and things like that. But you know, you can buy the ones with the batteries now, like in IKEA or Jisk or wherever.
Yeah, and I suppose even if you want for the night that's in it to turn off all your street-facing lights.
Yes, exactly.
And then put the candles in the window.
Exactly, for impact. So it's really about, like, I think it's like a project in my head. You know, like, writing down what you have, what you want to achieve, and, like, see, you know, trying to keep the budget
and actually,
low.
It's just one of those things of going in and picking out all the tea lights, all the candles, all the stuff that you have in your drawers in case there's a power cut. Take them all out. And look, it's Halloween. You don't just throw them all in groups together.
And exactly. Whatever you have at home, definitely reuse them.
Okay. Now, monochrome palettes. So if you don't want to go down the orangey route...
Yeah, I like that. So I've seen a lot of trends on Instagram and online and people going all black, as I said, with, you know, I don't expect people to paint their houses, but, you know, in any way you can. You could even get black. You can put black sacks over your couches and stuff like this. Funny ways of doing it and you can still reuse the black sacks. But also there's another trend of the opposite of all white and kind of creams and neutrals with very earthy kind of wreaths and, you know, keeping the room like really kind of, as you can imagine, like a Chanel decor, like neutral. It's a bit more low key. Yeah, it's very posh, but it's also less pressure. Do you know that way to have that? Because you're not having to adding everything black. It's quite, you know, huge impact. But if your house is quite neutral, it's easier because you could take out the kind of colourful cushions for that night and then add in things. And it's just, you can get white pumpkins and stuff like that. So you can go the other extreme with that and then add in kind of pops of black or pops of orange. So it's just a different way of doing it to keep it like a more low key way.
And actually on this one, which I'm looking at the picture here, you have the fireplace taken out, like in where the fireplace is, where the hearth is, the grate. And you've all these kind of like silver balls.
Disco balls. I love them. I mean, you'd have to have a party. It's an excuse to have like an 18th or whatever. My daughter's going to be 4 next year, so maybe her 4th birthday. But like, as I said, and you can also make them those disco balls yourself with mirrors. I mean, you'd have to be very patient. But, you know, as I said, everything that I would encourage people to, you know, from the photos, you know, do it as a DIY project.
And you've got little bats flying up the side of the mirror and everything.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, as I said, you add an impact with whether it's gold or like with glitter balls or things like that, or else, you know, just like a pops of black or pops of orange as well.
Okay. Now, my favourite theme, I think, that you've chosen for us today is the vintage horror.
Oh,
because
yeah,
we love obviously a bit of vintage on the home show, and love I know you
vintage.
Love
yes,
it too.
I love
so
vintage.
Describe to us what you mean by that.
So I suppose there's different ways of doing it, but you can go to a charity shop. If you don't have anything at home, a really simple and effective way is, and you can put these in your door or you can put them like, you know, in the windows and stick them on the windows, is getting old vintage frames or the ones you have at home and spraying them. Spray them gold, black, white, silver, whatever that is. And you can put in kind of images of horror images or like your favourite horror movie and put them in, or whatever. You can do prints, you can do bats,
oh,
like
that's
whatever
such a
that
great
is.
Idea.
But it's kind of like a useful decor way. And then also you can use the frames again, particularly if they're gold or silver. You know, you might not have black, or it depends on your style, but they can be reused after Halloween.
So you could download maybe the movie poster of,
yeah,
you know, Amityville Horror or
yeah,
The
exactly.
Omen or whatever it
yeah,
is
absolutely.
And put it in a frame and
yeah,
have those hanging.
You might not get a lot of trick-or-treaters
yeah,
if you have them on your window, but yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's a plus.
Exactly. It's a win-win.
Oh, that's a super idea. I really
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, and as I said, you can reuse them, which is
yeah,
great. And you can put
yeah,
them in your windowsill or stick them outside and mix and match that with pumpkins and lights. And there's simple ways in the fairy lights as well. You can reuse them. So
yeah,
it's keeping
all
it really
you have to
simple.
Do in a few weeks, you stick in Elf and...
Exactly, 100%. Exactly, 100%. Leave them
frames
up for Christmas.
Okay.
It's great.
Now, grasses, wreaths, twigs,
wreaths are so
all that.
Popular. They
are
popular all year round.
They are.
And there's so many fantastic people who do wreaths. I actually have, I'm working with Silk Procedure. I have my own flower collection, Silk Flowers. They don't do wreaths, but I'm learning so much about flowers and wreaths at the moment. And there's Doro, it's actually Lorraine Keane's sister. She does gorgeous Doro wreaths.
Yeah, we've had her in.
Yeah, she's
yeah,
fabulous. And there's a lot of, you know, you can make them yourself. And that's another thing. I would definitely look up tutorials online to do it really well, because as you said, like, you want to keep it. You don't want it just to last for Halloween. And you can add in things, Sinead, that are black and orange and
exactly,
then take them out for Christmas.
So you can
put lights on them.
Buy like a foliage, a
exactly,
green one, and add in all the... You know,
yeah,
or even get the kids to collect the leaves are all on the ground
exactly,
now.
Exactly, whatever that
and
is.
And spray
them
and varnish them and throw them into the
and
wreath.
And yeah, keep it for Christmas.
Fantastic.
After.
I love that. You have a little skeleton here sitting beside that one there. All right. Now, so the wine bottles. Now, far be it for me to suggest I have a lot of wine bottles sitting around in my house with no purpose, but you've given me a purpose.
I know. All the mothers are going to love this one. I was like, I have to get one in for the moms. So yeah, essentially, you just spray paint them. I've suggested here black.
You have.
Tell me
how you do that, because they absolutely look fab. So these look like, it's so simple, but I wouldn't know where to start. So it's a matte black and you're spraying the whole bottle.
Whole bottle. And, obviously
and using it as a candlestick.
Like, exactly. And get like obviously newspaper or something so you don't wreck your floor, because I've made that mistake. You're like, oh, you get caught up in the spray.
Not
in your
one
house.
For the kids.
Exactly. Not one for the kids.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, but you could also do this gold and you could use them for Christmas, I was thinking as well. Do you know that way? So if you spray painted these gold with, you could swap out the orange for the white candles.
And what are you spraying them with?
You can get spray paint
that'll
for a bottle.
Yeah,
stick to glass. Yeah, you just make sure that it does. I mean, people who would be very into like styling and DIY could paint it then on top of that. You could get gold paint and you could actually put symbols and paint pumpkins and stuff on it, or you get stencils and stick them down. So there's like, you could add to the black, but I like the black. I think it's very simple.
I'd need the bottle of wine now when I was doing that.
Exactly.
I'd need
your wine
poured out beside me.
You have your wine here and you have your bottles, so, and you can keep replenishing. It's an excuse to keep drinking wine. So I think it's a win-win for everybody.
It is a win-win, and you've put beautiful orange tapered candles in each one.
Fun.
So actually, as a grouping, they look
great,
absolutely fabulous,
doesn't it? Yeah, for
absolutely
a dinner party
fabulous
or something, I think it looks
fabulous,
great.
Fabulous, fabulous. All right. Loads and loads of tips. And as I say, all of those and pictures of them are up on Natasha's Instagram, which is Natasha Rocker Divine. And you'll spot them there and maybe be inspired to give it all a go if, like me, you have yet to get to the point where you're buying a pumpkin, never mind carving it out. Natasha, as always, thanks a million.
Thank you for
coming
me
into the home show. And I hope you and your family enjoy Halloween. And I'm afraid that's all we have time for this week. I hope you've enjoyed a lot of those items and got a little bit of inspiration and interest from them. If you'd like to get in touch with us or suggest a guest or a topic you'd like us to have on the Home Show podcast, well, do so. Email at thehomeshow@newstalk.com, or you can find me over on socials and contact me there. My thanks to producer Aidan McKelvey this week. The researcher was Rory Galvin and Stephen McLoone was on sound. We will see you all again next time for the Home Show podcast.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan.
With Mila.
Saturday morning at 8. On News Talk.